So may I, or is not there? Hello. Is the microphone working?
Yeah? It is.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it is.
So begin.
Just.
Let us begin. Hello, hello. Let us begin my lecture. So I begin with the greeting words. Thank you, Professor Varner. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, to being here. So the field of between, is this my microphone okay? Yeah? The field of between, the transmission and intra-relation. This is my theme. It is not okay. Now it is okay, I think. So the field of between, what does it mean? What does it mean? If we say A and B, the combination is a setting of one and another one, A and non-A. The conjunction and is meaningful if we reflect it philosophically. This conjunction opens a new space, it connects the different two, and it remains as a transmitter of A and non-A. It executes to create a possible dimension in which A and non-A can encounter in a relation and in their interaction. Here, A and non-A. If the two things are mentioned as A and B, what do you imagine? That A and non-A are both independent one. Thus, each one is bound to its own substantiality and stands in an encountering against the other one. In Buddhist way of thinking, no. There is a main principle since the early Buddhism. A and B, A and non-A are always in an interdependency. So without A, the non-A cannot arise. Without non-A, the A cannot also exist. They are, from the beginning on, in a relation of co-arising, co-existing. If the A goes to the background, the non-A is not in the same form and not in a previous situation. If A vanishes as that phenomenon, the non-A cannot remain in a previous form. The non-A must transform. Here we see that Buddhist thinking has, from the beginning on, another approaching to grasp the things and beings and their existence. A and B, A and non-A, are not separated, or they cannot be separable. Usually, people think in Occidental philosophy that A has against the B one's own substantiality, and the thing B has also against the A its own substance. But the Buddhist thinking doesn't centralize this subject. We can imagine comparatively. By Aristotle, is the ousia, the substantial, essential unity in every individual, every being, is centralized as the basic principle to construct his metaphysics. This principle is not valid. I say this principle of Aristotle is not word for word valid in the Buddhist philosophy. The substance of things and beings did not come to the principle in the early Buddhism. Let us think A and B are coexisting. They are co-arising. They are co-staying and co-ending. A and B, or A and non-A, are always a set. This setting is the principle to understand the Buddhist philosophy and its logic. This setting enables to arise a field of between, the field of between, a time-space between one and another one. The field of between is a topos for arising a relation and interaction of various kinds. The principle in the Buddhist philosophy is not A or non-A, either A or non-A, like that of Aristotle. I said in the Buddhist philosophy, another principle is in the main theme, A and non-A. The A and non-A is a principle set, a set. We can also say, I'm thinking in the Buddhist way, we can also say, if one of them, A or non-A, is right, and the other is false, we also say. But this polarity is regarded always in relations as a set of A and non-A. Nothing is omitted. Someone feels that Buddhist thinking is quite ambiguous. Someone means that it is irrational. Another one states that Buddhist logic is a unique principle which can be named as the non-dual logic. If someone thinks that the ambiguity is only in Eastern philosophy, I'd like to cite Plato, whose principle is also quite ambiguous in the source of the European philosophy. Plato means there is a principle, there is the one, tohen, and the other principle is the uncertain two. Plato said, this principle is a base to construct all things in the universe. The one, tohen, is a very ambiguous principle, and the second principle, the two, uncertain two, are also very ambiguous, very uncertain. Plato's position, the one and the uncertain two by Plato, are connected. The two principles are always connected and circulated in a relationship. I will interpret Plato's position in the following position, that one, tohen by Plato, is a symbol of an identification. And the other principle, the two, is the distinguishing of A and non-A, B and non-B, and so on. Both categories by Plato are very ambiguous, and they are very wide and very open. This setting of Plato enables us reflections of various kinds very openly. The reflections by Plato arises to the world of idea, as everyone can say in every lexica, it is a prepositions. The world of idea is a goal of the Plato's philosophy, to the pure conceptual thinking. But I see, I must say, in the Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist thinkers go on to another way. The Buddhist philosophy goes to a reverse direction. The Buddhist philosophy goes to the earth. The Buddhist philosophy goes to the earth, to the real world, to the life world, and quite contradictory direction against Plato. The cautious and radical critical view to the things and beings in a real world. It's by Nagarjuna, by the founder of the Mahayana Buddhist philosophy, quite remarkable. He states that each particular thing or being is constantly in a dynamic change in relations of one to another one. If we characterize the condition of a certain thing with time, place, situation, the principal condition to happening, to arising, to occurring, and vanishing of everything can be conditioned as the set of the three primarily important conditions: time, space, place, situation. The contents of the time, place, situation is always in changing, mutation, and transformation. Nothing remains in the same condition. Nothing remains in the same status. Nothing remains forever. This dynamic change has a causality of that, that all things are in a common ground which is not fixated, which is not fixed to any substantiality. This is the position of Nagarjuna. No God, no creator, no substantial something. What is really existing is only the relation, interacting, co-arising, co-existing, co-transforming, and co-ending, co-vanishing. This principle is named in the philosophy of Nagarjuna as the principle of emptiness in sense of an absolute freeness, not a vacuum, but an absolute unlimited freeness. And I must remark, by Nagarjuna, also a nihilism is negated. Here is often a misunderstanding that someone see Nagarjuna as a great nihilist, but no. The nihilism is also negated. Then, the nihilism is also in a relation to non-nihilism. Nihilistic position is always in a relation of nihilism and non-nihilism. The nihilism cannot be centralized alone. Things of the world are in a relationship of being and non-being. This is always the setting condition which we cannot ignore. Each encountering opens a possibility of interaction. An interaction is possible in a physical material level, in the biological level, and also in human community level. Let us see an elementary level of the material interaction in the physics, in a physical material level. A quantum, if a photon, a light quantum, is shot into a light-sensitive material, the photon makes a visible track. The detector, the sensible detector, clicks a sound. This physical effect is an interaction of flying photon and a sensor. I say the interaction happens in the field of between. The material A and the material B are not isolated subjects. The sensor and the flying photon, A and B, produce a topos. They are in a topos. The click sounds, the click tone of the detector is the result which arises from the field between A and B. This is an elementary example in a material level of the interaction. Let us see the human communication level. Let us see the interaction in the human community level. The relationship is various. The way of interaction is more complex. Of course, in a biological view, every organism is in a survival. They are not always in a harmony. They are not always in a positive interaction, but also in a negative interaction. Struggle, in view of the quantity of the force, there is a hierarchy, might and power. The human world, in the human world, there is also a hate, a struggle, powers and mighty. Let us scheme a relationship between brothers and sisters. I symbolized brother one, brother two are in a struggling. This symbol mark with X And sister one, sister two, they are in a harmonious condition. I symbolized this condition with a circling form. And brothers and sisters are in a well-organized equality. I symbolize, again, as another mark, the relation between brothers and sisters and equality. From a fighting situation, it emerges a hate. From a too long harmonious condition, it emerges also a jealous, etc. A hierarchy goes on. Buddhism grasps always how complex the human relation is. But the characteristic of the Buddhist insight is that every kind of hate, every kind of struggles and aggressions must be solved or overcome in freedom and peace. This is the irrefutable principle in the Buddhist philosophy. Sometimes the fighting or struggle cannot be escaped. It is real, it is true. The characteristic of the Buddhist philosophy is that the confrontation, struggles and fighting can be executed, but absolutely only within one's own self, as a cautious, self-critical self. Struggles can be happened, but in our own self, not against the other. This is a Buddhist position. The fighting shouldn't be executed against another one. If A and B hate each other and struggle with force, with power, the field of between is hardly destroyed, disturbed and destroyed. The principle of the Buddhist philosophy is always interdependency of A and non-A. The both are in a correlation, co-arising and also co-destroying, co-vanishing. This principle of the set of A and non-A is, even if someone cannot understand or accept it, the irrefutable basic principle of the Buddhism as philosophy and ethics. The leading motif of the non-struggles ethic is the karuna, translated as a great love, the compassion with wisdom. It means originally the groaning by the pain or suffer of another one, which is perceived as the suffer and pain of ours own. Very difficult. A great love. A great love without any connection or calculation of one's own profit. Very difficult, but very important principle to understand the Buddhist logic. The compassion would be often explained by the love of parents to their own children. If the own child has a pain or suffer, the parents receive this suffer of the child as theirs own. In this case, the field of between is fulfilled by the perfect interdependency of the true love. Let us see Dogen, one of the most relevant Zen thinkers in the Mahayana Buddhist history in East Asia. Dogen states, if we walk by a mountain accompanied by our deep breathing, slow tempo, we are a part of the mountain. So said Dogen. He said, not only we are walking, but also the mountain walks. He said also, if we regard at the mountain in a cautious view, without enthusiasm, without esoteric, very rational, very soft, the mountain regards us. The mountain regards us. So, Dogen, here is a unique construction of the subject-object relation, which seems to be quite rare in the Occidental philosophy. Let me explain. Usually, we say, I see a mountain. I walk by a mountain. Our ego is centralized. The mountain is only an object. The syntax is quasi fixed. In our daily language, no one thinks that the mountain regards us or the mountain works with us. Dogen said, if we are fixed to our daily language, we are also fixed often to a conventional thinking. Dogen says further, as I as the seeing subject, the mountain as the regarded object, here is the dualistic separating of subject and object. It is a very usual in the world, but reflecting in Zen Buddhism, it is a one-sided mentality, if we believe that only we as an ego are centralized in a whole world, and the things which we see are only object for us. It is a one-sided conventional thinking. Dogen states, no, the mountain doesn't exist due to become our object. The mountain is not due to be handled or operated by the human utility. The mountain has its own being. The mountain has its own dignity. Of course, the mountain doesn't regard us visually as we regard the mountain in our optic. But the mountain regards us through its own nature, the essential mountain nature. The mountain doesn't have a time measuring by watch that we have. But the mountain has also its own time, its own space to exist. The mountain participates also a part of the dignity of the whole universe. The mountain doesn't walk as we walk day by day, but the mountain is by us. The mountain is with us. The mountain is in us, among us. It is among us. It is moving and working in an unlimited flowing of the time. This is the essential part of the Dogen's statement. Mountain is walking in an unlimited flowing of the eternal time. The time is flowing. The time is a river. The time is an eternal stream. In this significant meaning, the mountain walks. The mountain regards. The mountain stays. The mountain flows, so Dogen. This is the essence of the Zen thinking. So I citated the essential meaning of the Dogen, and I explained it further from the philosophical mind. The subject and object are here typically viewed in a relationship. I cited Izutsu, and the Japanese philosopher, one of the relevant Zen philosophers, Zen thinkers, comparative philosophers in the 20th century. He schemes it so. Usually, or conventionally, we set our optic, I see. We set this I see into the center of the whole world. And from this starting point, we review. Our optic separates into the two directions. So one of them is, I see my object. The second one is, I see myself. The first one, I see my object, is oriented to extend our own interest to the world, whole of the world, out of the world, extensively. The second one, I see myself, is in a reverse way. It is an intensively oriented to reflect ours inside of the self. In the Zen thinking, we reflect the whole phenomena in critical and self-critical view, accompanied by the Buddhist principle of that co-arising, interdependent, co-existing with the compassion, karuna. Let us explain further. In the conventional thinking, based on the subject-object separation, we fix our own interest. We fix our own wishes to get and have something as our own object only. This motion goes to the greediness. Every viewpoint is in this case closed, tight, and limits our open view. Let us imagine, if we cannot get to the object what we want, our view station, I see my object, becomes very angry, frustrated. Our further view station, I see myself, is fixed by the regret, fixed by the sadness, or falling into the depression. In this case, the motion is caused by the fall fixation, by the lacking fixation of our mind to a certain point which disturbs or limits our original open view, our original open mind. The closed fixation of mind leads us to the greediness, angriness, sadness, etc. This is a Buddhist position of thinking. And in the Zen Buddhist way of thinking, here comes a drastic revolt. We negate this negative way of circulation of negative energy. We survey the root of every direction from the negative fixation. We become free from this negative fixation. If we solve our viewing from the ego-centralized position, the causality of the evil or the hated one or the hated object is also a subject. In a previous way of thinking, the hated object is the only object. It must be omitted. But in an open view, we see this hated object, hated person, is also a subject, a pity subject, and a regrettable person. We have to regard this hated person warmly. This is very typical for Buddhist ethics. So we have to regard this hated person, hated object, hated person warmly, accompanied by the compassion and wisdom. Here, the principle of the co-relationship, A and non-A, should arise intensively. We don't say either A or non-A. It isn't the Buddhist logic. It isn't the Buddhist ethic. A and non-A, even if the non-A a very hated person, very hated situation. Here we are. If we survey the limited view which is tended exclusively to our ego-centralized side, it opens a wide field of a transparent unity in which the subject and the object are not separated. They are constructing a field of an interrelation. Let me explain the interrelation cautiously. The Kyoto School philosopher, the founder of the philosophy of the Kyoto School, is Nishida. She states, the self is not able to recognize who he is and what it is. First, if one's own self encounters another self, it recognizes himself in the reflecting view of another self. This is very important and quite significant. I say self A and self B are always in an interaction, in a mutual reflection, in a mirror of another one. A and B are in a mutual transmission. This exchange of the ego-centralized view to the wide-opened view based on the compassion is the core of the Buddhist philosophy. I mention the next, the Huayan Buddhist way of the thinking, the principle of the intra-relation. Let us see, In the Huayan Buddhist philosophy, there is a unique logic to share the community. What is necessary in our own life world, in our life world, phenomenal world, life world? The first one is the theory of soku in Japanese reading. Theory of soku, the logic of standby. I name it the logic of standby for communication of A and non-A. The script, Chinese script soku, has a meaning, a symbol to express that the two things which are not identified are in a constant possibility to execute interaction. A soku B. It is a visual picture that A and B are standing by. They are others, but they product a coexistence. Here, it doesn't go in the direction of the struggle, survival, concurrence to construe a hierarchy. The Chinese Buddhist philosophy grows up in a phenomenal world of the nature and human. And in the East Asian philosophy is a general that the nature is not in opposite to human. Here, once again, another subject-object unifying is in front of this logic. First, this script of soku shows an absolute identity. A is only A, B is only B. If A and B are quite the same, we don't need to describe them as A and B. And we don't need to connect them with this special script of soku. If soku comes between the two things, A and B, it represents the sentence of the identification. And second, the same script soku shows the difference. A and B are distinguished. Therefore, A soku B is valid as a sentence of the difference. And third, A and B are not in struggling, but they are in the coexistence. So the human is a part of the nature. We are a part of phenomena of the nature. In the nature world, the vegetative being knows which way it can grow up in the best condition, without crushing against another one. Also, in the same kind of flower, each one is different. Nothing is the same. Also, the different kinds of trees can exist in the same forest. Everything is different in the phenomenal world, real world, but they can exist in a relationship. This principle is called, in the statement, Xi Xi. Wu Ai in Chinese. The Chinese script, only one script, the script culture enables to express the deep meanings in its multi-dimensional structure, just in a compact category, all in one. How does it work in a human relation? We can imagine that one's self, A, is a unity, one's own unity. This is a set which encloses the three elements. Here we are. It's better if you see this scheme cautiously. The person A has a main element, three elements, A, B, C. Another self, B, is also a unity, a set which encloses the other elements, D, F, D, E, F. And in the field of between, it emerges a topos of interaction and transmission in which the self A stimulates the self B with his special individuality, C. The person B is stimulated and gets the elements of A, the C, in a modification, C, the great C dash. Thus, the individual B has been enriched and it has a new construction. I schemed D, E, F, and the great C dash. The reverse way can also happen. The person A is stimulated by B, especially by the special element of F. The A gets in a modification. F dash, the great F dash, A is enriched by the person B and results a new construction. It products a new construction, A, B, C, and F dash. A and B, both of them are enriched by the mutual transmission. I come to the last section and very quickly. Soku, as a symbol, as an intra-relation. This is an applied logic of the soku. And this applied logic is called in the Pralayan Buddhist philosophy, the logic of new. New means A into B, B into A. Of course, A repels B. Sometimes B repels A. A offenses B, B defenses by A. This kind of the confrontation is always possible in the human world, the natural world, but in the Buddhist way, the best way of the struggle is, as I say, the rigorous confrontation in the inside of one's own self, not against the other, fighting. Who overcomes one's own weakness? He transmits his strength and his power into the energy of the compassion, the great love for another one. The logic of new can be achieved through this confrontation of the human. Let us explain it in an analogy of the phenomenon of the nature. If the raindrops melt into a seed in the earth, the seed splits. It grows up out of the earth. The raindrops conflate further. They stimulate always the organism of the vegetative being. The rain accompanies them from its birth until its ending. Hereby, the raindrops and the seeds are in a relation of new, the interrelation, the drops of rain new into the seeds. Let us ask, is it only one way of interaction, whereas the seed remains only in a passivity? No. This logic is always in a circulating. The seed splits. Its nature to grow up, it's merging. It is merging, melting, conflating into the nature of the rainwater. The vegetative being develops constantly to execute its own nature, whereas it merges, it melts into the nature of the rain. This kind of the new logic is the conflating each other. It circles from one's energy to another one. The energy conserves, the energy circulates, the whole world circles. The whole world is circulating. The essence of this logic of the Huayan Buddhist philosophy is this kind of intra-relation. Let me speak the last part quickly. The new logic and the soku logic of the Huayan Buddhist philosophy doesn't state only peace and harmony. It sounds as if the Huayan Buddhist philosophy speaks only the harmonious part. No. I said the rigorous confrontation must be executed exclusively in one's own self, inside of ourselves. Against the another one, we must envelop them very warmly, even if the other one is an evil one. Several humans tend always to struggle. They are always in hating, struggling, and killing each other. But from that way, it emerges constantly, only suffers in every relation. The Buddhist way of logic strives for a manifestation of the embodied ethics. Even if the Huayan logic is from its nature very harmonious, it distinguishes rigorously the goodness from evilness. Goodness are distinguished from the evilness. Evilness is distinguished from the goodness. We also state this difference, but as we say, not either A or non-A. A and non-A are always in a circling, always in a relation, even if the non-A is a bad one, evil one. Goodness and evilness shouldn't be mixed up in any case, that's true, but the absolute evilness, like a Satan or the demon, doesn't exist in the real world. So means the Buddhist way of ethic, because Buddhism envelops its cautious view, its deep insight, and its sharp logic always in the middle of the real world, in the life world. The absolute evilness is stated as a pure category, as a pure category. In the empirical world, everyone who is evil cannot be only evil in his whole life. The evil person is understood in Buddhism as the weakness, which is typical by everyone. Everybody is more or less weak. Everyone has a tendency to press a preposition, one's own interest and one's own profit, against another one. To execute one's own ego in a crisis, everyone can injure another one. In the Huayan logic, this thing is transmitted by the Soku logic. Good, Soku, evil. Goodness, Soku, evil. If we see an evil one, we shouldn't crush it directly. We shouldn't crush it directly. This is a Buddhist characteristic. In a cautious view, we must see the evil one as a phenomenon of massive failure. It is a phenomenon, a real phenomenon of massive failure, intensive weakness of one's own personality. The concrete phenomenon of an ignorance, unknowledge, the lack of wisdom. In regard of the evil one, we should practice our goodness every way, every day, in any case, only goodness, in reflecting our own weakness inside of us, due to construct a better field of between, even if the other one, is very evil, weak and ignorant person. It is quite difficult because the evil one doesn't have a clear insight. The evil person is getting more and more angry, only angry, and tries to struggle against everyone. But because we all are tended to crush in opposite to the evils, the Buddhism has its original characteristic to execute this principle. Non-crushing, non-violence, non-destroying, non-injuring. It needs a lot of patience and a lot of energy to construe the peace and freedom world. Therefore, we say the relevance of the logic of between, the logic of transmission and interrelation, is very evident. It is an unlimited way to work out, to complete our humanity, our nature, Buddha nature, for a realization of the universal truth. It is a highly ideal concept, but it must be realized in the life world actually. This is the system of the Buddhist logic, metaphysics, and ethics, and I come to the end. Here is the picture, the photo of the Zen practice hall of the great monastery of the Zen thinker Dogen Eheji in Fukui in Japan, in which I also practice sometimes more days, more and more. I come to the finishing, the end. I say my heartfelt thank you for every public. Thank you very much.
The floor is now open for discussion.
Someone?
I thank you very much for your lecture, and I think this lecture is extremely important to be heard in Western cultures, in Austria, here in Sigmund Freud University as well. It sounds a little bit strange, but I have the feeling that some so-called, I'm coming back to church now. I think nobody likes to hear about church, but in religion, also in Catholic religion, the concept that Jesus suffered mm-hmm. for the whole world,
yes, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. is very similar. Mm-hmm. I think it almost means the same mm-hmm. as you said, mm-hmm. but it seems like enlightening this message, this mm-hmm. Christian message, through a Buddhistic message. Mm-hmm. This is what was my idea.
I think in the practical level, a Buddhist way of compassion and the Christian way of love, great love, yeah, are very similar, quite the same, yeah. But the background of the logic, yeah, as the mountain see us, this all subject object exchanging comes very rare in the Christianity and this in the logic of the Occidental religion and philosophy.
This is why I was talking of enlightening.
Mm-hmm. Enlightening. I explained the Dogen's logic, yeah, but because someone imagines immediately, oh, it is a mystical way of thinking, it is esoteric, which can be only achieved by the Zen person who meditates very often. No. It's not so, yeah, because Dogen says very often. Dogen says quite often the Zen. Zazen, this meditation in an Anführungszeichen is the starting point. But if we remain in this level only tautologically, yeah, the misunderstanding arises. It is a mystic. The unknown people says always it is a mystic. Only who meditates very often can get such exchange of logic. No. I explained this exchange of the subject object. Yeah, in a logical way. Yes. Yeah. I saw the other one. Yes. Yeah.
I rather appreciate your presentation, but I think I have some information to offer you and your friend in the room. As I come from the tradition of the original Buddhism, I would like to say that at the time of the Buddha, the Indian logician coming to see him and trying to discuss some problem with him. The Buddha clearly said that he would not utilize logic mm-hmm. to communicate mm-hmm. His idea. Mm-hmm. I think thing we call Buddhist logic was developed. So maybe 1,000 years mm-hmm. after the death of the Buddha, mm-hmm. and I consider a thing called Buddhist logic mm-hmm. is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I feel it could be something wrong in the attempt to making Buddhist logic, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because the Buddha really said he would not utilize logic mm-hmm. to do mm-hmm. His philosophy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think when we try to do a thing called Buddhist logic, it seems to me just a plain weak word. And sometimes we try to argue against, for example, Aristotelian logic. I think exactly we do not argue against such logic. I think people who do Aristotelian logic, we say, yes, we understand you, you just use another word that
I see
from ourselves.
I see. Yeah, what you want to say? Yeah, but I will say mention Buddha. Yeah, in the early Pali Canon, said my dharma is not due to construe a highly metaphysical logic or the ontology. It's true. Yeah, but what I presented here is not the reinterpretation of the Buddha's words. I construe a new logic if I cited the Izutsu logical term. This is not the only Buddhist text, but it is a philosophy, philosophical anthropology, or the ontology, metaphysics, based on the Buddhist thinking. This is possible in the level of the comparative philosophy. I understand, but I understand your position very well. If someone as you is very deep in the Buddhist practice, yes, and he will mention this deep experience for another people, yeah, it's also okay. I love it. I think it is very beautiful. But in a comparative philosophy, I mustn't always only in a level or the in a thinking level of the pure Buddhist, only Buddhist station. And also, may I say, I didn't cite only the Buddha's word. No, I cited from the Dogen. It is a new Buddhism. And also, Nagarjuna is another developing of the logic. Another, as Varuna yesterday he said, Nagarjuna's logic is quite as a strangificated one. Yes. If we compare the old Pali Canon, the very pure early Buddhist Pali Canon, and Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyamaka Karika, someone can imagine: are they or the two? Are there two or another Buddhismus? Yes. And also from this developing history until to the contemporary philosophy, the Kyoto school is also not the pure Zen. It is based on Zen thinking. Some Kyoto philosophers practice very often Zen practice, but they are not Zen Buddhist. And Dogen was a pure Zen thinker, but he influenced many thinkers from his original viewpoint based on the Buddhist way of thinking. And I didn't say that Dogen's words, Dogen's viewpoint are really the same of the early Buddhism's text, Pali Canon, and the early Buddha's word. No, I didn't say so. Buddha stated, so, in the Pali Canon, my dharma is not due to construe the logic. My dharma is due to help the people. Yeah, and this viewpoint is also very valued. Very valued. I have took an important place in my presentation, as I was not limited in a pure logical way of thinking, but also I cited Dogen to explain that this logical way of thinking is based on the compassion and karuna. And this way of logic, bounding to the compassion, bounding the karuna, is a very special one. Therefore, Dogen's logic has two-dimensional connected possibilities to connect Christianity, and also his logical way, a very rational way of thinking, can be connected or compared with the contemporary ontology in the in our present life world. Yes. Yeah.
May I just a short remark? Wittgenstein said, I must be quiet, and I say any word, also man, auf Deutsch, wenn man jetzt, dann müsste man schweigen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, yeah. The last part of the Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, yeah, the of Wittgenstein, is quite symbolic. As I read at first time this phrase, I thought immediately, that quite same thing, similar thing that Dogen said, we have to practice the non-thinking of non-thinking. Yes? Insofar, if we use a word, if we use some logical explanation, we also see the limited possibility of our language. And Wittgenstein has executed the very precious, precise logics and fall or the correct and the scheme and so on. And he found also the very contradictory parts in our Western formal logical philosophy. And he said, I mentioned a lot of things. I verified a lot of things, but it shows always our limited language. What is remaining is still now the incomprehensible, the incomparable, inconsiderable thing. Yeah. This is the borderline. And I'd like to say Dogen and Wittgenstein achieve a quite similar point. Exception of that, Dogen was a Buddhist, yeah, religious practicer. Wittgenstein was quite another person, the logiker, yeah, the scientist and the analyst philosopher. No? But in a comparative way of thinking, we can see the construction of the logic. Yeah. So of course, this construction of logic is not interesting for the people as a pure Buddhist thinker, as the previous speaker. No? But I see we don't omit anyone. I would like to say. The previous speaker, the questioner, yeah? So he speaks this incomprehensible, this not speakable thing through the experience, deep experience of the meditation, that we cannot describe what it is. And I as comparative philosopher, tries to explain and deduce very analytically, as far as I can, and in the citation of the Dogen's and Dogen's thinking, main thinking, and reinterpreted by the Izutsu's scheme, and I reinterpreted the Izutsu's scheme in my way of the logic. This is not briefly Buddhism. It is based on Buddhism, but it is a new philosophy, new cognition. The comparative philosophy is not only comparison, A and B are only different. It's not the comparative philosophy. We are setting into this field of between Dogen and Wittgenstein, and as I explained, as I demonstrated, we can construe our own logic, influenced by various very interesting thinker, also by the early Buddha's word. In this way, I would like to think further. Yes?
Thank you for your presentation. Mm-hmm. I myself have a different kind of question. It's regarding the point you said about the person you have in front that can be very conflicted, and we can be very angry at that person and so on. And in my personal situation, I'm a psychologist and I've been meditating Zen for a couple of years now. But it's still a very big issue for me, because in psychology you normally have this attitude that you think you have to express feelings, mm-hmm. and those are very honorable and mm-hmm. respectful things. Mm-hmm. So if people are angry, mm-hmm. how are we supposed to express them? Mm-hmm. I mean, society mm-hmm. doesn't accept mm-hmm. anger. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy, in my point of view, from Buddhism to say, okay, you have to be very compassionate, mm-hmm. you have to mm-hmm. be very calm, mm-hmm. you have to meditate. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you
yes.
can't.
Yes,
because
yes.
you're human and you,
yes.
you know, you...
Yeah. I am a person who is very confronted with this difficult situation. Yes, if we say compassion, transmission, difference, and the identification are all in one, it is very easy. It is said very easy, but in the reality, it doesn't work well, no? Because, as I said, the evil person doesn't hear, yeah, doesn't listen. They omit, they repel our position. But on the other hand, if we struggle, if we hate this kind of very difficult person, what happens farther away? What can be productive? What can be productive?
Maybe it's not productive, but it's just what I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
In the Buddhist way of thinking, we accept, we see this situation very transparently through our cautious view, and we have to work further. We have to work further. Sometimes we must ignore this evil person, sometimes, but we don't struggle it in front of them, but we influence them. We influence them, and in the Buddhist logic, it is a very good word. This evil person or the evil one gets one's own karma, one's own results of the amount of the evil handling, evil acting, and so on. That this evil person can be or should be isolated very soon in the community of the human world. And it is true. The karma is bounding always to one's own self. And if someone amounts an only bodily karma, he or she limits his existential position. He repels always against the other, and the other are not always patient. The karma, no God punish us, but one's own karma returns back to our own, so says in Buddhist way.
I like your presentation, it's very clear, and I would like to support you from the mainstream standpoint. There is also a term, Bali term, to signify the mutual relationship between the cause and the effect. That term is Bhajjayagan. In English, it is conditionality. Mutual relationship between the cause and the effect is different from the so-called cause-effect relationship. Because the so-called cause-effect relationship, the relation between the cause and the effect is only one-way direction. But conditionality can signify two-way direction.
Yes.
Between the cause and the effect. So I think in Mahayana tradition and mainstream tradition or Theravada tradition, there is no
difference.
And another thing, you speak of the embodied Buddhism. May I know a little more about this? Excuse me, I would like to say something to the psychology who asks you. To add, if you meet a monk, some monks in Thailand, and you ask the question how to deal with anger, he will not tell you to stop anger. He will say that just see your anger. That's all. Thank you very much.
It's very interesting. Yes. So to the last question, I can also mention, in the Zen tradition, the disciple of Bodhidharma, the original founder of Zen Buddhism from India, he came to China. He had several disciples, very exciting disciple. The one of the disciples asked me, I cannot recognize what is my mind. What is my spirit? Bodhidharma answered very clearly. show me, what is your spirit? What is your mind? Show me. Yes? Yeah? This is a quite, might be a little bit aggressive, but the same way. The statement is the same. Yeah? The monk, Bodhidharma, said to the disciple, you have to view. You have to see what you are, what is you are, and your statement, and your status, and your situation here and now. Only this insight of it is a deep insight into the one's own self. Without this second position, there is no Buddhist ethic, no Buddhist logic. And for your first mentioning, conditional existing. It's a very good word, I think. Yeah, so I love it. Coexisting is perhaps super superficial. The conditioning of ethics, subject object position are always circling in a circulating. It is also by Dogen remarkable that not only we see the mountain, but the mountain let us see what it is. This subject-object exchanging is in our world of so much struggles, so much hating, so much stress, very important, I think. Someone? Yeah.
No, I'm afraid it's my sad duty to be the guardian of the schedule today. Thank you very much, Professor.